Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
A friend's older brother, they got really nice hummus from this place in Chicago. And one day we're sort of snacking and like, you know, they're like, hey, come on, like try the hummus. And I have it on a cracker. I'm like, yeah, this ain't bad. His older brother comes in, digs in with his fingers like a claw, and just walks out sucking his fingers clean of hummus. And then his little brother, who I was friends with but would not be friends with much longer, continued to eat from the hummus as if nothing fucking weird had just happened. And, like, me and my other friend, like, are looking at each other, and we're like, what? Yeah, we're recording. I'm recording. Me and my other friend are looking at each other, like, and it's just one of those things where it suddenly recontextualizes every bit of food or drink you've had in that home.
Yeah. Yeah. No, like, I have a very real you cannot eat in everybody's home policy. Like if you offer me food, like, I will probably take some food. However, there are things you can do where I'll be like, nope. We're done here.
That was I'm sorry, like, I can't eat any of your food ever again. Like, so, unless I see the package opened in front of me, I'm not eating here.
So, speaking of weird food shit, my girlfriend struggles to take pills, and so takes them with food. Because if she tries with water, she'll, like, often, like, gag really bad.
Yeah, okay, similar issue, yeah.
Okay, so, we got some Teddy Grahams for that exact purpose. And we were eating a Teddy Grahams, great, 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 great. We get to, like, midway through the box of Teddy Grahams, and Hannah reaches in, and she pulls out something that I can only describe as looking like an owl pellet.
Decent chance that some sort of dropping, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I was, because she was like, oh, what's this, like, why is there, like, a huge piece of weed in here? And I did resist the urge to immediately tease her for that. However, she's like, why is there a huge fucking piece of weed in here? I was like, I am 85% sure.
Hey, the Teddy Grahams are done today. No more Teddy Grahams.
Yeah, we threw those away immediately. I could probably.
Here's the problem, though. My love for the Teddy Graham is so strong, even hearing that story.
No, we didn't smell it.
It was probably super desiccated. I'll bet you didn't smell
it. It was extremely desiccated, yeah.
That's true. What if it was just a fucked up Teddy Graham that went through the machine?
Well, so this is the thing. Like, you do sometimes get things where it's like, MK loves the cereal Kashi. It's the most annoying fucking cereal in history, but it is kind of tasty. But, like, it is like, do you ever just want to chew a bowl of rocks? Mm-hmm, and it's like cereal.
Right.
But, like, sometimes their baking process goes a little bit wrong, and they create something that basically is just a rock of, like...
yeah.
The bake and then the spray, the powder flavoring all congeals and then gets like superheated, and it's like a tooth shattering disaster.
Yeah.
So, like, sometimes, like, stuff like that just happens in manufacturing, but
you get weird.
Yeah, but anyway,
things.
Like, here's the problem. Like, here's how I'm wired, though. Even hearing that story, I'm like, oh man, I could murder some Teddy Grahams right now.
Yeah.
No. If someone was like, hey bro, I just brought some Teddy Grahams, I was like, cool, I'll just pick out the owl shit.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally get it. I get it.
All right.
Sorry.
Time
sorry.
Dies.
Sorry. 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 You can buy small premium owl pellets sets of 30.
What?
For? Oh, it's for teaching.
It's for laying out. Okay. It's for serving Teddy Grahams.
At your next function, you got to mix them in. Just
lay them out on a plate, and where's the decorative owl pellets?
It's like king's cake, you know? You don't know what you're going to find.
Sorry, Kato, you said kings and then a food name, and I thought you were talking about King's Hand for a second. The greatest dream food ever invented. Now I'm just imagining like a little pile of Teddy Grahams with like a circle of owl pellets around it, as if you're about to cast some spell on the Teddy Grahams. Wow, Beelzebub really loves Teddy Grahams.
I swear, guys, this time the Great Bear will awaken. All right. Good time that is, and clap in.
We tried this with gummy bears. It didn't work.
Wait, is Patrick not here today?
Patrick will be here shortly.
Also, wait, what's the time we're clapping on, Rob? You never said that.
We're going to go on 30. Yeah, Patrick sent his kid off to school without some school project stuff. Yeah, so he's like racing over there to fix that. Yeah. All right. What's good, internet? It's April 26th, 2023, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 568. I'm your host, Rob Zachney, and I'm joined by Ricardo Contreras.
I really hope Patrick ran out the door with a piece of toast in his mouth like an anime child late for school.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a fun match to me.
I hope he made this sound. Whoa!
And that was Renata Price.
Hi.
And Patrick Klepek will be joining us later once he has delivered some stuff to school.
Patrick Klepek will return.
So yeah, it's been a week where there's been a lot going on. We're getting ready for the shutdown and everything. Not quite as much gaming as I would hope there would be. But Patrick's not here, so I can just tell you. Okay, so the other day, last weekend.
Is he the only thing stopping you normally? Is that it? Is it just the
last weekend? I was like, I don't know where they want to play.
Kato, you sure as hell aren't stopping him.
I want to play something fucking mean and like cyberpunky.
Hell yeah.
And so it was time to play Starbreeze Studios Syndicate.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's fucking go.
And I'll tell you,
what?
That decision was tremendous.
That decision was fantastic.
And hey, you know what's good? Just a proper fucking shooter. Is it a big open world? No. They are levels. They are pretty linear. You are going down corridors with machine guns and shotguns, and you are just clearing them out, well, and it rules.
Machine guns, shotguns, but also the fucking rifle that has the two different sights that you can flick between with the wall penetration. That is the single shot rifle to me in all of video games. I think that they peaked as a form with that gun, and we shouldn't have progressed past that point.
Well, also the rifle that fires the smart rounds that have light tracking on them,
yes,
feels tremendous. Like, okay, tracking guns are not a new thing in games, but no. Starbreeze made good fucking shooters, and the weapon feel on that particular weapon feels tremendous. Like, it requires some real craft to properly arc those shots and, like, figuring out what angles they can make and, like, how to draw in. It's great.
I'm so sad I never got to play that game's multiplayer.
I only got to play it once during a save point.
And I know it's sick. I know it's, from what I understand, like conceptually and like execution wise, relatively sick.
I want to say it was me, Natalie, Emmanuel, and probably Austin, because Austin was like super into it. And yeah, the multiplayer was incredible, hard as hell, because like it's a bit like Payday in that things kick off and then the ratchet is just intense and spirals upwards. But the single player is terrific too. I think a thing I really enjoy about it is just like, I don't know. It's weird. Maybe it stood out less in its time because everything was sort of grimdark and edgy. But the thing that strikes me playing Syndicate is like genuinely how grim and bleak.
Like, to borrow a Jacob Geller term, it is an ugly game. Like,
it's Kane and Lynchian.
Yes, yeah. Like I still think about the scene where I believe you're trying to get into a facility and you hack someone's brain to shoot his friend and then himself in the head.
And that's how they introduce the persuader trauma mechanic.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It is a heinous game in terms of vibes, and I fucking love it.
And it doesn't even have that, like, in the Deus Ex prequels, and even the original Deus Ex, even though that is a very dark future type game, all of those are sort of responding to, and they are shot through with reactions to techno optimism, techno utopianism, And if you go to like the Deus Ex prequels, even there, there is a strong sense of like, the world is turning to shit, and this technology is being like perverted and twisted. But the thing that is missing that is present in Syndicate is that like there is no hope in the world of Syndicate, like absolutely none. Like there is no one in a position of power or authority who has any vision other than this like blind animalistic like reproduce and enhance your power. That is what the corpos in Syndicate are all about. They are just like mindless consuming machines, conducting industrial warfare for no real reason other than to perpetuate themselves.
Right, and do it in the cruelest way possible. Like it is a very real the cruelty is the point ass video game at times. I'm just watching footage of it. It also moves. God damn, this game moves.
The movement is incredible. The audio soundscape is one of the best. Like, the sound of weapons in different environments, the punchiness of all the weapons, the impacts, like, it, like, they don't make them like this anymore. And I had kind of forgotten how different, like, a properly constructed shooter lands.
There's a little sweat. I'm watching a preview. A gameplay preview from 2011, or actually no, 2012. There's a little sway to the guns, but like what's happening is there's the implication that there is a body that is moving, and the pistol is still being pointed directly where your reticle is, and so there's just that a little bit of physicality that is so evocative. Oh, Syndicate fucking rules.
But it doesn't compromise the sense of being like a swift, responsive shooter.
No.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. The pistol is always pointing at your reticle, right? There's always a little bit of like, how do I move in such a way where I can get my body to still be generally in this area? And like, it's just a little animation detail that's like really impressive and like brings it all together in a way that I like really respect, as you were saying.
And the voice actor list is incredible. Brian Cox is in it, basically doing the most Brian Cox-ass performance. He's the head of Eurocorp. And he is in his full, like, Hannibal Lecter, just absolutely ice-cold, sinister bastard mode.
Yeah.
It's incredible stuff. So for people, like, just to give you some background, I think one of the things that, Syndicate is kind of EA dusting off a property for one of the many studios they acquired and killed over the years, Bullfrog Syndicate series. And I think that when we talk about the meanness, I think one of the things that you can't lose sight of is like when I encountered Syndicate when I was a kid, it was like an EA Classics collection or whatever. But that was a not top down, but isometric, today we would call it a twin stick shooter, but it was like a shoot 'em up. But like what you were controlling was a squad of like four little cyborg agents through these missions. But the thing that was really striking about it as a kid was you were going through what for the time felt like living cities, right? There's traffic on the streets, tons of civilians and everything. And the game didn't care how many of those civilians you killed or how you used them. And so one of the tools they give you early is this thing called the Persuadertron, where if you moved an agent with a Persuadertron active near a civilian, they'd get like brain controlled and they would start like following you around like a little baby duck. And as you acquired more people as part of your little like hive mind, more people would follow. And what that basically created was an armor bubble around your agents.
Oh my God.
Yes. So you could walk into engagements with other enemy agents who were like the super, like agents are super soldiers compared to like the cops you're killing right and left in this. And so the value of having these herds of civvies is that one, as you killed enemies, they would pick up guns so they could help you out during firefights. But two, when the shots started flying, there was a wall of meat between you and enemy agents that like they would have to cut through before they were like doing damage to you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a kid, I was like, I was floored, right? I was like, this is the hardest game of all time. You finish gun battle, and it's like just bodies littering the street, burning cars, etc. Amazing stuff. And all just gleefully for, you know, you're the bad guys, right? This is kind of Bullfrog's thing. Like, this is the Dungeon Keeper studio, if I'm not mistaken. It's all, it's all very, you know, it's very transgressive. The IP, I think Syndicate Wars was well regarded. I never played it. I always meant to, but like, you know, the studio kind of withered under EA, franchise is kind of abandoned. And then Starbreeze makes Syndicate like years and years later.
Right.
We got Mr. Caffeine here. Mr.
Oh,
my God.
Oh, wow. That's a nice haircut, Mr. Caffeine.
I just got one. Yeah, I got one this morning.
Looking good, man.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyway, sorry. Syndicate talk. Please continue.
Yeah, absolutely. So they go and they're like, and this is probably the flaw in the project. They're like, we're rebooting Syndicate. And I'm not sure when they did that, there were still a lot of people who were like, fuck yes, Syndicate. I'm not sure that moment was still there. But the game they made is the first-person shooter equivalent of that original game in a lot of ways, in terms of its attitude, its bleakness, its like wanton but like pointed violence. And it's all those things while still also being like just incredibly satisfying to play, because Starbreeze is like was an elite like first person shooter making studio.
It would be so easy to look at Syndicate as like a failure of imagination in terms of like, how do you bring a franchise back, right? That reading or like that perspective in the game is like so easy to see how you get there. They turned like a really inventive like twin stick shooter into like a boring FPS, right? And instead they made one of the best FPSs that has ever been made. And I've just been watching like gameplay video, and it is a incredibly like feel heavy game, and also one that like, you know, translates that bleakness and like that disregard for human life from the mechanical to like both the mechanical and the narrative, right? Like there is in this like 11 minute gameplay trailer, I'm seeing you like take a, and this is how you get upgrades in this game, is you like take a human being, you take a little, the worst device you've ever seen, you kill them, you shove it into the side of their head, and then it reaches its little tendrils into their brain.
While you see it in X-ray vision.
Yeah. And pulls out this little chip. And like, it's an extremely grisly animation. And like, the game knows this. It knows that that it's gross as fuck, and has decided to commit to that. And I don't know. I think that like, it was for the time, in a time that was like very, you know, defined by kind of mid first person shooters without imagination, Syndicate is like such a beacon of what that era could have been.
I think it's still on EA Game Pass, if people are curious. And it's one of those things where like, I think it looks more dated in stills than it is in reality. The graphic style is very clean. And it has a look that is a little bit timeless. And so it's very easy to slip back into. That's what I've been up to.
That was a cool time for EA though, right? Like that's Mirror's Edge. You know, Syndicate, I mean, like it's an era, around of the EA originals, Brutal Legend, Rock Band. I mean, EA is a company that's very easy to criticize. They've done a lot of mishandlings over the years, but there was that, you know, a period where they were doing some interesting things, taking some, like Syndicate's a risk. Like I understand. Yeah. It does fall into that bucket of, oh, they just took an old property and made it into a shooter. And I just think a lot of people could not get past that. I think for kind of understandable reasons, because the cynicism was well earned. But I think part of why Syndicate has had a enduring legacy is because it's been borne out over time that like, oh, actually it was trying to do something awfully cool. You know, it was the true of Mirror's Edge as well, but it's the problem when an EA puts it out. It's like, it can't be a like small success. It has to be a blockbuster, because that is kind of the market that a publisher like they are in. I did think it was interesting that I was reading the Wikipedia page where some of the original developers of Syndicate were not super happy that like it was that distanced from a lot of what the original game was. And so Satellite Rain, which like comes from the Syndicate Wars designer, was explicitly a public response to the Syndicate reboot.
Oh, I never put those two things together. That's fascinating.
I mean, maybe it's, I'm reading a Wikipedia page, maybe it is like anything more complicated than that, but that it was like, this is what they're doing with Syndicate. Well, let's go make something. And if I didn't play this, but my understanding was it was like pretty well received, right?
Austin and I did a 3MA on it. It is very cool. It's, it is a game with a lot of, like depth and possibility in it. There's a lot going on in it. I think that, like, for me, that was also a little bit like a bit like the original Syndicate got for me. Like, there are times it verges on like a little unwieldy, but in the way of like, wow, this game also lets you do an awful lot of things.
Yeah.
Wasn't Syndicate also of the era where it came out on a bunch of consoles and every version was different?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god. Oh, was this one like Sony was demanding everything have a little
special?
No.
I'm meaning original Syndicate.
Oh, original Syndicate, I think, was just PC. Syndicate Wars might have come out on consoles, but I feel like original Syndicate was like...
I wonder what game I'm thinking. No, Syndicate did come out on everything.
The original Syndicate went out on consoles?
Sega Genesis, NES, PlayStation, PSP.
What year did it go? Like, was there... I'm just curious, was it like the same year, or was it like a couple years later got ported over?
Later thing, it looks like.
Just because that is an era in which you could not reasonably expect that what you were buying on the Super Nintendo was the same as what you were buying on the Genesis. Like, those could be wholly different games. And I
the Aladdin head, problem.
Yeah. In my head, I'm thinking Syndicate is one of those where, like, people could reasonably go, actually, the Genesis version was, like, so much better. Not because it, like, had a cooler sound chip that had like a better dynamic range, but because it was like fundamentally a different game.
Well, I can't imagine Nintendo letting Syndicate be Syndicate at all.
I have no idea. And this might not even be the game that I'm... This was common of the era.
I mean, listening to the list of ports, though, it feels like... it's like MS-DOS, Amiga, Mac, Sega Genesis, SNES, Atari Jaguar, 3DO, Sega CD. I feel like there's no way all of these could be the same.
Well, so the Wikipedia says a separate version was made for the simpler 16-bit consoles as the hardware could not support the complexity of the original game. It contained new level design and different graphics. Maybe working off a similar blueprint, but probably more action-y or less tactic-y if I had to strike a guess.
Real quick, can I like note a historical detail about the time that Syndicate was released in?
Yeah.
This was the EA voted worst company in America 2 years in a row era of EA.
God,
so like I think they're so stupid. They're so dumb. But like I think that is what has colored, you know, that is part of what colored the game's like initial reception was the fact that like it wasn't just like people were mad at EA a little bit. People like EA didn't have a bad reputation. EA had the worst possible reputation at the time in a way that was like even now feels like kind of unique. I feel like a publisher other than maybe Activision Blizzard right now has never been hated as much as EA was in like the 2012 to 2013.
But I mean, and again, like part of the earned reputation, like, okay, the gamers voting them above oil companies, you know, is bad. Like that's a given, but it's, you know, oh, so you're bringing back Syndicate, making a first person shooter. Right. Cause you fucked up Bullfrog. Like, cause you just can't manage a studio.
Yeah.
You know what
no,
I mean?
No,
like,
I get it, how we get
like,
there.
Yeah. And I'm not saying, I just,
right, but this was also so far past that era. Even like, that's,
it
like,
is.
Like,
that's the 90s.
Everyone
this
was
is,
shutting
this
down
well
studios
that.
By then. Yes, like it's yes. the whole, like, even by the time people are like EA kill studios, it's like, I'm sorry, children, you don't need, like, name five studios EA killed because like y'all
well,
are
actually,
outraged.
We probably
about something.
Could do that. We probably could do that actually.
Yeah, yeah, no, but we could. But the thing is, like, the people who were like EA is a terrible company, it's a terrible publisher. A lot of that was like, yes, but its worst crimes were like years ago that you're that you're pissed off about. This is about other stuff. This is whining about other aspects of their business model. At a time when the company was still trying to do interesting things as a big publisher, and just across the way, you could see what the future was over at Activision. And everyone had no problem with that. It was just like, yeah, hell yeah, slop us up. Yeah, I don't know. Like it, like it's weird. Like EA's reputation was like at its worst in a lot of ways at a time when it was like actively trying to be a better company than was the median for like large publishers. And you know, that moment passed. I do also feel like in this era though, like they released this run of cult hits and I don't know why they never became more than cult hits. Like it's,
I mean, what other company would approve two sick and twisted Alice in Wonderland games, Rob? American McGee presents. I actually quite liked that first one, frankly. I mean,
kind of classic.
I don't know if that game's any good, but like it was of the era where sick and twisted Alice in Wonderland was like, yeah, sign me up. Like, that sounds great, actually.
You like Dante's Inferno? I think that Inferno? Game was all right.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It sucks that like look at, cause you know, we just got the Dragon's Dogma 2 announcement. And like Dragon's Dogma 2, same era as Syndicate, I feel like was failed in pretty similar ways. Like by its reception at the time, where like a bunch of freaks were like, hey, wait, everyone, I think this may actually be like really excellent. Versus what the easy, like shitty read of it.
Yeah, well, I think part of what also goes wrong here is Starbreeze kind of folds up, and you can say like the Starbreeze legacy moves into other studios, but like, you know, the thing about why hasn't there been another one of these? Starbreeze fingers got burned with after a series also, of like really fascinating.
They made Payday. Like they've been making Payday for.
So a company named Starbreeze.
Okay.
As making Payday. My understanding is, what was the company? Overkill? It was like one of those things that I think was like an acquisition takeover, effectively, where Overkill was the company that basically made Payday. Starbreeze acquired them, but all the Overkill people ended up running the show, and it basically became Overkill under the Starbreeze brand. But like the Starbreeze development people who'd made shit like... The Darkness, Syndicate.
They're into machine games, right?
Another ugly game. Another ugly ass game. The Darkness.
And an all-timer. Just another, like, incredible game. But yeah.
I've been watching, I'm about 3/4 through the Double Fine documentary, Psych Odyssey. Mm-hmm. And I've mentioned before, one, cannot recommend it more. Like, it frankly should be like a required text for people to watch, to just watch a game from start to, like, broadly from start to finish. It's excellently made. But during this, it's easy to forget that Psychonauts 2 got a lot of its funding in the middle of its development or beginning of its development from Starbreeze. Starbreeze then got caught up in a stock trading controversy. I forget the exact details of which, in which executives at the company kind of go into hiding and cannot be found. The company gets taken over by the government as they like
fuck
work
yeah.
through the books. Like Psychonauts, like there are these stand-up meetings where, you know, like it's like every Monday morning, Tim Schafer gets in front of the entire studio. And like, so Starbreeze, do we know where the CEO is? We don't. Are the checks still coming through? They are. For how long? Great question. And then can we get some project
Damn,
updates?
Damn, he's just like about- us.
He's just like us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tim Schafer's exactly like us.
And I think Starbreeze came out on the other side of that, restructured, but as a result of that, like weren't really like in the publishing business. I think they're in the middle of making Payday 3, but like it is wild to like have this conversation while having just watched a bunch of like incredibly stressed game developers go through like awaiting checks from this company, and it's just Starbreeze bizarre.
Well, I guess like speaking of stressed and distressed game developers, this probably landed on my radar a bit more than y'all, just because like I play Company of Heroes games, but like Relic hit by big layoffs.
Is Relic going to continue to be a strategy developer?
I don't know how big Relic is, but I feel like 121 people is a lot for a studio.
I think I saw that it accounted for about half, maybe.
That is truly horrible news.
But my gut reaction to that is Company of Heroes 3 didn't sell very well, or not to expectations, and that kind of deep cut is a result of missing sales expectations, and then a project falls through. You know, like didn't make it past the prototype phase or hit a milestone. And but they're wholly owned by Sega at this point, right?
Yeah, they are.
Okay.
I do wonder what the, you know, obviously I think they sort of said they're not halting development on Company of Heroes 3. You know, they're continuing to work on it and maintain it, but what does that mean? I don't know. There's been a series of disconnects around Company of Heroes 3, where I think a lot of us who played it at launch saw the single player campaign had tons of issues. It was really not what anyone was hoping for. Conceptually, it didn't really work out in a lot of ways, but still it had a kernel of like a great RTS single player campaign, some great missions. But the thing that really started to jump out at me in the ensuing weeks is I shouldn't do this. I shouldn't use this shitty little feature of my Pixel phone, but I'm lazy and this is how they get you. So on a Pixel phone, if you're on your homepage and you swipe right, you go to like a Google News feed, which is like a mix of interesting stories and then some around the web shit, right? But it's starting to figure out that, you know, I partake of the games news sometimes. And so
assigned gamer at Pixel.
For weeks I was getting like, it was just telling me like, hey, you want to read another angry Reddit thread about Company of Heroes 3? And so the vibe I began to pick up is that like things that were getting a lot of pickup on Reddit were people complaining about Company of Heroes 3. Steam reviews, not good. The community is like kind of rejecting this game and being like, I'm just gonna go back to Company of Heroes 2.
Is it like an unfinished narrative? Like, we've had a lot of really rough launch state games, like not exclusive to PC gaming by far, but I think we've had a kind of a rolling thunder of games launching in states that feel not quite early access, but certainly, is this out the door? I can't remember how you felt, you know, in terms of how this one launched, if it kind of fell within that bucket.
It felt finished, but like also a little half-assed in a lot of ways. Like it was like the game worked, but in terms of like, I guess what you call like fit and finish, like build quality type stuff, it wasn't there, right? It was like the contractors left and they didn't put in a lot of the trim and seal up all the holes. Like there's just a lot of places where like it looks like you're dealing with placeholder art still in the UI that never gets finished. You know, they're game like Reddit threads people were sharing was like, here's what the game looked like in the pre-alphas and here's what it looks like in reality. It's way less impressive.
That's not where you want to be.
And
so Dark Souls 2 looking at screenshots. Remember when there was lighting on the torches? They took it away from us.
So there's a bit of that, though. I still think the game looks really good in motion. I think that stuff is a little overstated, but the big thing seems to be there's a large sense that there's a lot of folks that felt out of the box, the game was massively unbalanced in multiplayer. And I think related to that and the fact that like multiplayer RTS games are not as big as they used to be, who is left is a community that like is pretty reactionary and maybe a little bit toxic. Like one of the things that swept through that community was that you couldn't get a good game. You were stuck in queues waiting for games forever. And then people would just quit out of matches the minute they saw the matchup. And they were like, I don't want to play this faction. I don't like this is unbalanced. This is bullshit. I'm quitting. And so it was like the multiplayer RTS was kind of the bread and butter of this, developed a reputation for being unbalanced. Yes. But more importantly, because of those ongoing issues, a game where it was just impossible to find good pickup games using any kind of auto matching. And so wait times got worse fast, and like people did, I guess, start going back to Company of Heroes 2. I don't know how representative this all is of the actual experience versus people who are getting mad online, but it is this weird thing of like Company of Heroes 3, the big swing to win over people who were kind of unconvinced by RTS games was the single player campaign, which had some major issues. And then, like, the multiplayer, which was really aimed at, like, the Company of Heroes faithful, came under really hard fire, and I think the Company of Heroes faithful in some ways began burning the game down, both publicly and in terms of their behavior in matchmaking queues.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just a single data point, but, you know, just looking at the concurrence for Coming of Heroes 2 and 3 on SteamDB, it's like right now there are just under 2,000 people playing Coming of Heroes 3, and right now there are just under 5,000 people playing Company of Heroes 2. So yeah. It does seem like there has been a...
Not ideal.
Been a retreat, and like if you look at... I just lost it. But anyway, like if to describe it with a hand, I was looking at the data of the player account. And obviously, launch is going to be a spike, but it's just... like it is just up and then just a diagonal down to the corner, suggesting that players maybe stuck around to play that single player campaign that I know you were pretty high on in parts, Rob. But then once you've burned through that, with what these games need to live and die on is not replaying the campaign, but is engaging in multiplayer and the communal aspects. And it seems like people may have made the decision to, well, if I want that, I'll go to the one where the community already exists instead of building a new one in the third game.
So here's the weird thing. This is a bit of history repeating. I don't hold me to this, but I feel like when Company of Heroes 2 came out, it was like, but the game is so much further along and the community is so much more mature with Company of Heroes 1.
I mean, isn't this every multiplayer game? Like, I feel like every Smash game, I hear this. I mean, you know, correct me if I'm wrong. Like, you know, Ren, you play a lot more fighters than I do, but How analogous is this to controversial switches between communities that get attached to a particular version of a fighting game, and then the new one comes along for commercial, for design reasons, and then communities are forced to sort of make decisions?
So I will say that fighting games are played a lot more concurrently than I think strategy games, or at least from my understanding what Rob is describing in Company of Heroes here, right? Like Rob's describing specifically the Company of Heroes community, but like, you know, if take Guilty Gear Strive, for example, there are players who were professional or at a like, you know, top tier level in both Strive and Exerd simultaneously. And were like practicing both games simultaneously. There's a class of player who plays multiple games at this level. And like even me, for example, like once Street Fighter 6 comes out, I will not be like ditching Strive completely. I will be playing Strive and Street Fighter 6. And so I think that there is a degree of analogousness here, but also like the other thing that has come with fighting games and like their more recent updates is rollback. And rollback is a full game changer in terms of like the way that people approach fighting game communities. If a game has rollback, people will play that game over the version or the previous edition that did not have rollback, like 9 times out of 10, because it's that much of a technical improvement. But no, like definitely people get like attached to certain system mechanics and like stick with one game over later games. That happens all the time. It's just not on, I would not consider it to be on this scale.
There's like a reason why it's the fighting game community, and like there's obviously sub communities dedicated to specific games under that, but the FGC is the whole thing, and like that's
yeah, I guess it is kind of that is kind of unique like, to fighting games where like there is a genre community
that
feels bonded in a way that you do not. I think you would rarely, maybe there's a little bit on strategy. It's like maybe it's more niche genres. Like have like a kind of a broader stitching, but I do consider that like pretty unique to the fighting game, like where you have an actual acronym like an FGC, which is just not true of anything else.
Well, it's the esportsification of it is an essential part of that difference, but also like I don't know, there is something different about the way in which you play a fighting game compared to the way in which even multiplayer you play a strategy game. There is just like a different level of connection to the other person who is playing that game, and it causes like a different kind of community growth, right? Like I don't think that, Rob, correct me if I'm wrong here, no one is going to search you on Twitter after losing to you in a strategy game to be like, go fuck yourself, but also great sets, I really appreciate the way you play.
Yeah, no, that's not gonna happen.
Right, that happens in fighting games like all the time. Like I was playing a fighting game recently, and like, you know, someone like tracked down my Twitter and was like, hey, good sets, I actually think that you use this one mechanic really well. And like, so I think that the community is like functions too differently to be analogous.
I think that the other big thing though is just like you know, Company of Heroes 2 exists for like 10 years without a sequel. And so, like, they've given that game away for years, effectively.
I mean, that was
so,
going to be like, also my question was, like, yeah, the gap between these games, like, contributes to some of this issue on the community level.
Yeah, you end up with, like, an install-based problem, right? Where it's, like, every time you launch one of these, are you going to convince people to walk away from the thing they picked up for $5 and enjoyed for years? Are you going to convince them to come pay, like, $40, $50 for the new thing? That proves to be tough, especially when the initial reaction is almost always, like, really negative, or it's focusing on the negative. Yeah, Ren.
I was going to say, like, I've never played Company of Heroes. However, I do own Company of Heroes 1 and 2 because of a Humble Bundle. And, yep. Like, I think that, like, that was the other thing, is that, like, you know, to call back to different eras and, like, different ways in which games released and were purchased, the, like, peak of the Humble Bundle era was, I think, aligned with, like, a large influx of players to games like Company of Heroes 2 that have since, like, not been able to, like, transfer those player bases over.
Yeah, it's, right, and I think that is, but the thing is, that is also something that could change with time, right? Like, I think in the long run, if they actually do stick with Company of Heroes 3, they can probably replace Company of Heroes 2. They can slowly, like, winnow that community and win them over to the newer game, provided they get the runway. And it sounds like that runway may not be there, because, like, these are really dispiriting layoffs. I don't know, like, which, you know, departments were most affected, but again, it's just it's a huge number that really bodes poorly for the future of Relic, which really sucks because they're a, you know, legendary strategy game studio.
There just aren't that many that operate at that, like, the blockbuster strategy developer is just increasingly the total war game. You know what I mean? Like, it is like, there just aren't that many studios that specialize in this style of game. And so what would be left? Like, what would be the next major project from them that you would expect? Like,
I don't know.
Warhammer, right? Isn't that the other big one that they work on?
Warhammer Dawn of War 3 might have poisoned that well.
Okay, all right.
Now, Emmanuel will tell you that game got just an unreasonably bad rap. Like, it was they tried to ride two horses at the same time, where they're like, we're going to do classic RTS, but it'll be like MOBA-esque. And
no, hold on,
it ended up being kind of neither fish nor fowl. And I think that turned a lot of people off. But Emmanuel went back and played it like last year, when this is the sickest thing I've ever, like, both sick in terms of, hey, that's awesome, but also, like, you know, we need to have Emmanuel's brain examined someday by science. Emmanuel went back and played all the Dawn of War games.
All of them? That's sicko mode Rob, and Rob's already down that road.
Except, but he actually made it happen. He did it. He found the time. He was like, I'm on to Soulstorm. And I'm like, how are you on to Soulstorm? How is this happening?
I don't know. Is this what people do when freed from the shackles of, like, having to play games at a pace? That is for covers? Like, you know what?
Between Emmanuel and Rob is
to play this game. I can just spend the next 3 months playing the Warhammer games.
Yeah.
But I also think, like, it's just, to me, there's also, like,
that's a lot.
Emmanuel's got to have an ability to just zero in on a game and be like, this is what I'm doing when I'm not doing other stuff that I just lack, where I'm like, oh, what should I do tonight? Maybe I'll give that Night Agent show a shot rather than play games. And then it's like, wow, this is like, This is like 3 Days of the Condor, Parallax View, written at a fourth grade reading level. It's awesome.
well, I mean, also famous, like, sets a sight on a project, goes to accomplish it. Like, just recently, asked very politely, Manuel, not someone that has, like, asked for game codes a lot. You know, like, we have a, you know, or have had soon
those days are done.
A spot in Slack, you know, we're put extra game codes, and, like, we'd used all the Dead Island ones. Rob and I had played that, and Emmanuel asked, like, please, sir, is there another Dead Island code? I'm like, I got you. I know this PR person. I'm pretty sure I can get a third one. Like, and this is on a Friday, so I sent that email Monday morning, like 10 a.m. Code comes in. Paste it. I'm so excited. I'm like, look, I come with a bounty. on Monday. And he's like, And I was like, what is the He's like, did you not give me one full business day to accomplish this task? No. Was not given that. Just bought it. Just, I put it over the weekend. It's like, do you think about telling me so I could have not canceled the request? No. Sorry. All Manuel does. Goes off on a mission. Accomplishes it.
It's
Dead Island or Company of Heroes or Warhammer.
So like, but anyways, the point is, but he coming out of this, he swore that Dawn of War 3 was not what people swore it was. And it was like, if you really got with it, it was actually a much more traditional, like a great Dawn of War game, fit in with everything. It's cool. And I'll take his word at that. But like, that was a game where they basically cut support within a month of launch. Like it was just an instant, like, well, we missed. And they halted ongoing development after that. Like, you go into that game right now, there's a bunch of live service game shit still there that's not hooked up to anything, not talking to anything. It is just like the entire conception of the game was kind of dead on arrival. And you can still play it, but it just didn't go anywhere.
Looking at their development history for like last 10 years, you've got Company of Heroes 2, 2013, Dawn of War 3, 2017. So they're taking, you know, they're a studio that broadly seems to probably have two projects going, but like one game that's the main production before its hand, like resources are handed off to the other. 2021, you have the unique situation where Sega works out a deal with Microsoft and they develop Age of Empires 4. That game, good, bad? Where did we end up on
awesome
that
game?
Okay. And awesome. Yeah. That's 2021. And then resources must shift over to Company of Heroes 3, which comes out February 2023. And nothing is announced currently for the future of Relic, which makes me very curious what the future of Relic even is. Is there a scenario where they are just, I forget, what's the Total War studio called?
Creative Assembly. But Creative Assembly has moved into a support studio thing where there's like, they just announced Total War Pharaoh, which is made by Creative Assembly Sophia. And so they do, like, Creative Assembly has been looking for ways to broaden its development pipeline. And so there would be,
is there a world where like Relic kind of becomes like a Vancouver extension?
It would not totally surprise me if they end up doing some ongoing work for various Total Wars. Yeah.
Which would be a bummer place for the studio to end up. But it just makes me, I guess the question leaving on is like, where do you, like, this scale of strategy game, like, is it just harder to, is there just not really a market for it anymore? Or is the market harder to pin down? Or is this just unique to the kind of games that Relic makes? And this is just what happens. Eventually you run out of track and, you know, you've got to, you know, try something else.
RTS games, I think, are a uniquely challenging environment right now. I think that is a major issue with it, is that when they were at their peak, they were really good vessels for narrative storytelling. And now with changes in technology and the way games can tell their stories in other formats, like, RTSs don't have that advantage. And so it is a very fussy way to get at a single player narrative experience. And I think that puts a lot of people off. I suspect it's still like viable at a smaller scale. I suspect that there's a sustainable level that places can hit. I think the people to really talk to about this, because I've never been 100% clear. If you talk to like Blackbird Interactive, was Homeworld Deserts of Karak, like, was it a success? There hasn't been another, but they're making another Homeworld game. You know, do that seemed like a game that was very cleverly scoped and operated at a very good scale. Was that doable and repeatable? Or even there, are you running up against the limits of like what is sustainable given the market? I have no idea. It's heartbreaking because I love these games. I think at their best, they're magical experiences. I've had magical experiences with Company of Heroes 3, but it is just so hard to break outside the bubble. And within the bubble, everyone's always got their knives out. Everyone. It is a very challenging community to develop for, because the thing is, the people who are really diehards about this, all those little issues that I'm like, yeah, it's kind of annoying, I don't know, like, I guess maybe that's a little unbalanced, the sheer number of like games they're going to encounter that, and it's just going to be a little poke in the eye. I think this is why these communities like tend to get toxic, is because like for me, it's like, oh, I'll play this game, you know, a couple times a week. You know, it's not perfect, but I'm sure patches will address it. It's fine. It's a lot of fun. If you're playing like dozens of games a week and every time you're seeing this shit, I suspect you turn into one of those folks on Reddit who's just like going up there and being like, get a load of this shit, y'all. And everyone's like, yeah, fuck Relic. This game sucks. And so I think there's a lot of challenges to developing in that space. We should take a quick break. And when we come back, we should talk a little bit about State of Play. Back after this. All right, so I've been informed it is in fact not a State of Play. It was a PlayStation Showcase. That was that awkward pause at the end of the last segment. Mm-hmm. It was a minute I said it, I was like, no, it was the other one, wasn't it?
Gotta make sure we get the SEO right on this one. You just want to talk about Alan Wake 2?
I forgot we got Alan Wake 2. Rob, I forgot we got Alan Wake 2. We stay winning. Oh, I love this showcase. Great.
So, they showed a trailer of Alan Wake 2, announced it's coming October 17th. As an aside, they're not doing a physical release. They are just doing a digital release for the game so they don't have to charge $70.
What about my collector's edition?
You can get a deluxe digital edition. And my guess is they do like a partnership with Limited Run Games or something later.
If they do another art book like they did for Control, then that's a day one perch.
And they're probably going to, because like, I feel like that's kind of becoming the Remedy thing, is games with vibes and vibes that are expressed in book.
Yeah.
And this one had fucking vibes, which is interesting because it doesn't look like it's just Alan Wake vibes. Again, it's a different, you know, like Alan Wake at the end of that game, he leaves behind sort of the Twin Peaks environs for something much more like metaphysically horrifying. And then with the fact that universe is adjacent to the Control universe, the setup for the new game is just sort of automatically like less grounded in reality and more grounded in like ethereal nightmare fuel.
Right. I think it's like different kinds of like dream world, right? If Alan Wake is like a Twin Peaks ass dream world, then like this is, I mean, this is closer to something like, it reminded me of The Evil Within 2.
Yes.
Yeah. It reminded me of The Evil Within 2. In terms of like the specific kind of like bad vibe, hey, this dream has bad vibes. Energy is the Evil Within 2 energy.
And you know, I've always said we need an Evil Within 3 that's like Evil Within 2.
God,
that's always.
But now it would be like with Alan Wake.
Yes, yes.
And also, like, I don't know. I think I'm very happy to see them looking at Alan Wake as a franchise and being like, you don't have to play as Alan Wake. That's silly.
Yeah,
you can be someone else other than.
Well,
Alan
let's them
Wake.
Do both, right? Like, how do you want an entire game in the surreal? No. So how do you ground the game back in the real world a little bit?
Yeah.
And having this, I guess, like FBI agent that is investigating, I think what's characterized as a series of murders. We don't know what that means exactly, and that allows them to do still some of the stuff where it's like the really fun bits, where it'll be nice to have a complete dreamscape, which is, I'm sure, where Alan Wake is stuck at the moment. Although I guess the trailer ends with him being pulled out of it. But the idea of like still having.
Or did the other person get pulled in?
Yeah, I guess that's. That's possible. I really did seem like he was surprised to be there as opposed to her the other way around.
Y'all seen the website? Look at these fucking vibes.
I'm so excited because. If there's one, God, this fucking rule's cut out. If there's like one thing I want, it's for Alan Wake, one of the men with the shittiest vibes in human history. There's one of the all-time shitty vibe characters to have sat in the pain matrix for like 7 years. And I want to see what kind of scrungly, fucked up little guy happens when you put Alan Wake in the pain matrix for 7 years and then immediately introduce him to like a plucky FBI agent. I'm desperate for this.
So
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah, and then it looks like there's a bit of they're doing a like Skulder and Mully type situation with like the FBI agents.
Oh my god. Mandy.
Yeah. A bit of that too. But like it looks they're touching on like the Agent Nightingale stuff from the first game where he's the FBI agent who realizes he's a character in one of Alan's novels and is like, I have to kill this guy before his story kills me. So I'm curious if like we're actually kind of in a prequel scenario here. It just looks really interesting in terms of what's going on. And it's got a lot of the folks from the Remedy ensemble, right? Like James McCaffrey's been voicing characters in that universe since Max Payne 1. You know, it seems like he's got a featured role here. So I'm super stoked.
Sam Lake just put himself in the game.
Is in the game again.
You know, just shoot your shot. I mean, you already shot your shot. This is you just owning it. It's tremendous. I hope Sam Lake is a main character or like a central side character. That would make me deliriously happy.
I'm so fucking excited for Alan Wake 2.
Yeah, it looks good. The fact they, you know, confirming a release date means that they feel pretty confident about that game, you know, actually coming out this year. It looks awesome. They definitely they said they were going to go for more of a horror vibe, and you know, Alan Wake was more tense than it was explicitly scary. And I'm sure this game will have a mixture of that. But they've said they've wanted to emphasize survival and horror, not necessarily survival horror, but like those two different elements and how they interact. And I'll be definitely curious to see how that is elaborated on. It looked good as hell, though. I'm like, to have a next gen Alan Wake is not a place I expected to be in. And the fact that Epic just said, ah, fuck it, go make the game. Like just like that Fortnite money. And look, I like Fortnite too, but you know, have Fortnite, the engine that produces a game like Alan Wake 2 that probably shouldn't exist at this budget and scale is a good place to be.
So that was definitely in my wheelhouse when that showed up. Patrick, like what were you super stoked about when you saw it come up in the showcase?
Well, unfortunately, the thing that comes to mind that is most top of mind is the lack of PlayStation VR 2 software being shown. When I reviewed that hardware earlier this year, I was impressed by the hardware. I was, I thought the Horizon game was pretty good. It wasn't anything amazing, but it was like, it's a lot of what I was excited for was, hey, if Sony says they're going to do this, great. Then that means they're going to put AAA production budgets behind a bunch of VR games. I think that might be a poor sales pitch. I don't know that's going to work out financially for the company, but that's not my problem. I'll get to play a bunch of cool games made by big studios with big budgets in virtual reality, a space that I like dipping in and out of. And a lot of the launch lineup for PSVR 2 was one game, Horizon, a spinoff, and then broadly a bunch of ports from what is the current sort of king of VR, which is the Quest 2. And those games are better on PSVR 2. They're good games. I think the conclusion I drew from that review was, if you've been holding off on VR, this is a great entry point with a great piece of hardware and a lot of games you have not experienced. But if you've had any experience with VR, there's basically no reason for you to jump in on this because it's just slightly better. Like, you already played Res before. Do you want to do it with eye tracking? It's neat. I don't know that it's $500 neat and then paying for an upgrade to, you know, upgrade your existing PSVR purchase to the PSVR 2 version of the game, because none of those games were compatible. They had to be brand new versions of those games. And there just wasn't a whole lot here in the showcase that suggests to me the company is really excited about the future of VR, that they're investing a lot of first-party support into the future of VR. it you know, if I was to just make a conclusion based on this showcase, it would be they're happy with having produced a like really nice piece of hardware that will get a lot of the ports of games, because if you're a VR developer, why wouldn't you make it for PSVR if you're already making it for the other platforms? And that's okay, I suppose, but that is a lower bar than I was expecting. And if that's where we end up ultimately with the device, I would find that to be a profound disappointment. And so it's hard to like to tell, is that actually where we are at, or Sony just didn't want to start talking about what it has cooking? And there's an easy way for me to try and create more hope for the future, which is that broadly they didn't talk about much of anything that was in the future for their first party lineup, for the things that their studios are working on. Last of Us Factions is a game that is supposed to come this year, and we saw nothing of it here, despite it being the kind of showcase where you think, now is that a game where it can get its own billing and get a bunch of hype? Yes, but it also would have been a great spot for a teaser trailer that's just like, and here's also something we're working on, we're excited to talk about it later. Just didn't get a lot of that, and so I...
Stuff is being held back for Games Fest so that they can do, like, the... And now a musical interlude.
Yeah, I would assume so, right?
Yeah, even Games Fest last year, I'd say, like, the Summer Games Fest, like, showcase was pretty disappointing. It was, it had a lot of stuff you and I were excited about, Rob. Another sci-fi horror game? Lap it up,
let's go. You know,
like, couldn't be more excited, but... I don't know. I'll be curious to see if that is actually the case, right? Because Keighley, despite having slayed the dragon that is E3, is at the whims of the consequences of all of these actions, which is, sure, Keighley will get a couple of things, but these companies want to do all their own showcases, and now we just sort of scattered to the winds. And I thought it was interesting.
Yeah, but
to see,
if there's a big stage, sometimes you do save stuff for a big stage where you can do like more live production.
And he has a
stuff.
Close relationship with Druckmann. Like, it would not shock me if Faction showed up at Summer Games Fest. And that is where they showed that for the first time. And in the totality of the year, that is pretty close to one another in terms of announcements. But if you were looking for this showcase to be, and what's next for PlayStation? I think that was like broadly answered by Xbox's kind of funny tweet that was like, look at this great lineup of games coming to Xbox, which was like 3/4 of the things shown in Sony's lineup.
Hey, speaking of Keighley and just like hobby horses that dude has and connections, can y'all catch me up on like the state of Metal Gear and how we should feel about these Metal Gear collections? Because like my understanding was Konami destroyed their games like development pipeline and then was occasionally going to cash in and like have things wearing the skin of some beloved franchises, but like by and large it was all kind of a crime against God and nature. And that doesn't appear to be the game plan anymore. I didn't see people seem stoked about like return of classic Metal Gear.
So it's worth noting that I believe this is the case. I want to qualify this, but there was a change in gambling laws in Japan that has basically meant that like part of Konami's business, the other half of their business, got real dicey real fast, and they have to reinvest in games effectively because the other half of their business is suddenly a lot less profitable than it was previously. Yes.
They also own a bunch of exercise places, if I recall correctly.
But I will say this, like a re-release of Metal Gear Solid, Metal Gear Solid 2, and Metal Gear Solid 3 would be great. I'd love that. I wonder if it'll be Metal Gear Solid or Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes. It will probably be the original and not the Twin Snakes version, sadly.
They've already shown screenshots of in development versions, and it's the original, it's not Twin Snakes.
Damn it.
So.
Damn it! I want my jet plane noises, Patrick.
I don't think Twin Snakes is like that. That lives in emulation, and I don't think that game is ever going to get a proper re-release. I mean, they have said that like the collection is a volume one, so we don't know what volume. You know, if Metal Gear Sickos would probably be more volume two or three, depending on how deep they go. I mean, I'd love if they revisited it and re-released it. It's one of the only Metal Gears I have not played.
One?
Twin Snakes. The GameCube remake with Silicon Knights.
Yeah. But it's still one.
I've played everything.
That's why I was like,
yeah.
I assume volume two would be Peace Walker 4 and 5.
I think 4 and 5 might be
it big enough on its own. I wonder if 5 is too recent, where it's just, you know, pay the piper, you know.
Yeah, but that may be a, yeah, that would make sense.
Please, Metal Gear Acid, please and thank you.
Is that the fucking
give me my Metal Gear Tactics card game?
Fuck, right.
It's super good.
I'm
it's great.
So mad I never played that game.
Good, Kato.
You should hold out a little longer on the, in the event that they do. There's two of them. There was a Metal Gear Acid and Metal Gear Acid right. 2. The second one got like a really cool kind of like cell shaded visual upgrade, if I remember correctly. And like I didn't play the second one, but the first one was like dominated my PSP for a long time. It was
that was
excellent game.
That was me with Peace Walker. I absolutely love Peace Walker. And so I'm very hopeful that we'll get another Peace Walker re-release, because we did get one already. It was re-released in addition to Metal Gear Solid 2 and 3, which were re-released in an HD collection for the PS4 at like PS4 and Xbox One at launch, or like pretty close to launch. They released those collections and then it all fizzled out from there. And, you know, at this point, Metal Gear Solid 4 is like bordering on abandonware. Like it is.
Mm-hmm. It has not been released anywhere. And the funniest part about there's been a lot of rumors about this Metal Gear Solid 3 remake, and people have been spending a lot of time before it's been announced, because it's taken a while for Konami to sort of get its shit together, frankly speaking, in terms of being a sort of a development hub again, whether working with partners or doing things internally. And it's still not really clear right now how much they're doing internally and how much is just partnering with lots of other I think someone asked Konami about, there was a statement from the Metal Gear Delta, you know, development team, very SEO friendly by making that a triangle. And it was like, this is a combination of, I think Virtuoso is the studio, and then internal Konami people. But my reading there is like, broadly, this game is being made externally with oversight from Konami. But for a long time, as people are trying to figure out what is this going to look like, Konami has been redoing Metal Gear Solid 3 assets, but they've been doing it for cutscenes in Metal Gear Pachinko machines. So it's not the original cutscenes. It's like updated, like new models, like new lighting.
It's a little something called synergy, my friend.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It's been incredible to watch. It's like, three is my favorite of the Metal Gear games. So if I was ever going to revisit one, this is the one I want. But it's been delightful to watch like Metal Gear heads just like desperate. Like, what would it look like if it was updated and given, you know, a new coat of paint? And it's like our best guess at what that looks like is Konami's vision for the gambling machines. And it doesn't seem like, and there was like some running theories, you know, this company is famously sort of cheap. Are we just seeing previews of assets that they're going to use in the future? And it seems like that is not the case. The pachinko assets are not what they're using for Metal Gear Solid Delta. But, you know, the thing that is, you know, completely, I think it's very easy to imagine how you would do a pretty simple, like, aesthetic pass of Metal Gear Solid 3. I think fundamentally, mechanically, that game is still pretty sound, but you cannot re-release this game in 2023, 2024 without doing a gameplay pass if you're going to re-release it as a new game and not a just like HD collection or whatever. And the moment you do that, the moment you start touching those things, the things that cannot be all attributed to Hideo Kojima, right? But like, if we just use that as a broader way of talking about what that game was, you get into very interesting territory, because at least Silent Hill 2's remake, however you feel about Blooper, and like, I'm with you, a lot of criticisms are valid, reasons to be concerned about that remake, lots of the original folks that worked on that game are deeply involved in that remake. And so there'll be plenty of blame to go around if you don't like how it turns out. Here, we have no indications of like who on that original staff, if any, are touching this. Kojima down. And I think that is valid reason for some concern on, you know, this series is like very much out of a vision of a person that filters down to that staff and then they execute on it. What does it mean when they are removed from that? I don't think it's necessarily a disaster, but I do think it's going to breed a lot of like pretty valid concern and criticism as they start to actually talk about what this is. Because we didn't see anything in the footage. It's just Snake, Snake model.
Yeah.
Does the PlayStation 5 controller do pressure? Does it have pressure buttons?
It's so much haptic. Oh, pressure buttons? I don't know if it has pressure buttons.
Was that the whole thing? We got rid of that, right? I don't think that's a thing anymore, is it?
Is it just a thing that's just like nobody uses, but they keep building in for like legacy support? Or is it just like, no, it wouldn't work? Because like, right, one of the things was like, if you let like press like the different like
this is so funny.
You could
Kato, I googled PS5 pressure sensitive. First thing that comes up from this Reddit user has deleted their account. I wonder what they got up to. Anyway, PSA, DualSense does not have pressure sensitive face buttons, continuing the trend from DualShock 4.
Right.
Which means what this means is that classic PlayStation games like Metal Gear Solid could never work on PS5. Yep. The aiming and firing techniques use pressure sensitive face buttons.
Yeah,
I'm not
going
to read all this, but do you remember how exactly did the pressure sensitive stuff work?
It was like if you like kind of lightly press, it would start aiming, and then like full hard press is when you would actually fire. But then from like the half press, you could kind of slowly let go.
So the trigger buttons do that. They the trigger buttons on the DualSense.
So they could maybe move around to get that some of that back. But that was all face button stuff. That was all like square and shit.
So that's the different thing. It's like the triggers. I remember experiencing this in Returnal and greatly disliking it, which was like I forget exactly what they were assigning to it, but it was like a half press did something, a full press did another. And in the thick of a fight, I did not want to think about like how much my finger was pushing down.
It works a lot better, I feel like, in this context of it being stealth, because you're already moving slowly, right? Like you're moving methodically. You have the time to sit and think, like, okay, I'm going to slowly press this button. It's not an action game.
What was it doing? Was it, like, the difference between, like, going prone and crouching? Like, what exactly
were you altering? It was just, like, the way you aimed was all one button instead of hitting two buttons. But it was, like, half press to start aiming, you move the reticle to where you need it, and then you full press to actually fire.
I guess I was just wondering from the face buttons, because like
That was on square.
Oh, yeah, I 100%. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. Now I see.
Because like, yeah, they didn't use shoulder buttons to fire until did they do it in 4 maybe? But like, yeah,
they did in 3 as well.
Okay, so someone did respond. Okay, so because obviously these games have been re-released on different platforms.
Yeah.
So I guess, let's see. For example, Metal Gear Solid 2 and Metal Gear Solid 3 on the PS2 and PS3 HD collection, you would need to hold the square button down lightly to aim.
Yeah.
Let's say a machine gun. You would aim and look around with the L1 button first person view. When you're ready to fire, you'd hold square down firmly to begin firing your weapon.
Mm-hmm.
As it is now, when you press the square button on PS4 or PS5, because there's no pressure sensitivity, the gun just starts firing without you being able to aim it,
possibly
alerting guards nearby. Nowadays, most games use L2 to aim, R2 to fire, but back then, Kojima and the Metal Gear team used square to aim, light press, and square to fire, firmly press.
Yeah.
Other actions like CQC, where you would hold up a guard to extract information, use circle to grab him, press lightly, circle to kill him, press
like
firmly.
If you hold it hard, it's like you're choking him out and killing him.
Which is cool. There are many actions like these throughout the older games or the series that make it impossible to join services like PS Now because they take away the controls of the player. PS1, PS3 controllers use pressure-sensitive buttons. After PS4, Sony stopped incorporating that feature into the controller hardware. I mean, certainly seem like solvable problems, but I think what is arguable is that it kind of takes something away from like a cool design idea that they had. Because actually that idea of like lightly press to grab, hold for choke is cool. that's just neat.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no. I really enjoyed those games. I guess they're kind of just do combos and context sensitive like stuff to like kind of go around that, which is probably a big part of the work being done, obviously, of remaking that game.
I mean, like people pointing out, I have to imagine it makes sense that Kojima would do stuff like this, but otherwise probably mostly first party games. But people pointing out like Gran Turismo 2 and 3, you would adjust the gas pressure like slowly over time with the X button as opposed to a binary, you know, go, not go, which is neat.
Before we call it a day here, we should also talk about Dragon's Dogma.
We don't have do we it's tw- we, it's, like, it's
we I can go like 10 more minutes. Then I gotta get in a quick meeting for a meeting.
I mean, Ren, maybe you have more say in it than I do. Like it looks surprisingly like Dragon's Dogma, and I say surprisingly because Dragon's Dogma felt like a weird accident of a game, and that when you're going to commit to doing a sequel, it would not shock me if there was some streamlining and some sanding off of the edges to justify just the budget of a game these days, regardless of kind of scope. And so the fact that it looks, what do you think Dragon's Dogma 2 would look like? Probably like that. And so I think that bodes well for it continuing to have a lot of the eccentric elements of Dragon's Dogma that I think will, this game is going to get more attention than the original did. And I think it will prove to be perhaps frustrating to some folks if they continue down that path. But that's exciting for me as someone that enjoyed the weirdness, the friction. It's just an odd game. And it did seem like from that brief footage, I saw magic archer bullets and I saw a game that looks like Dragon's Dogma. That's kind of all I was looking for so far from Dragon's Dogma 2.
I'm very excited about Dragon's Dogma 2. Dragon's Dogma 2 is like deeply, Dragon's Dogma was a deeply formative game for me because it came out in 2012 when I was a youth and then re-released it as Dark Arisen when I was a slightly older youth. And like both versions of the game were formative for me in different ways. I think I played the original Dragon's Dogma and Dark Souls, like maybe on back-to-back trips to the video rental store, which was like a real 1-2 punch of like imagining different ways that third person action games could be. And it's since been like deeply influential to the way I think about games. And I am, like Patrick, like very like happy that it looks like fucking Dragon's Dogma. The things that like that made me very happy to see in the trailer is like they are continuing to commit to like one of these signature like aesthetic of Dragon's Dogma combat, which for me is Hitstop. Hitstop is like one of the most like clear aesthetic signifiers of that game's combat system, because like where most games will have like Hitstop on, which is Hitstop when all animation stops upon like landing a powerful hit, where other games will have like Hitstop on really big attacks, Dragon's Dogma has Hitstop on most attacks. And so you get this like, if you're like swinging a big sword, which you can see this in the trailer, you get this chunky like click, 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 click as you swing through an entire group of goblins. And it has this very like berserk-esque, like there's a rhythm to it that I really, really love. The other things that I saw that I like found really interesting is spells that do things to the physical environment are going to be like, seem like they're going to be a little bit more important this time. We saw like a bridge spell. You could use spells that reshape the environment in the original Dragon's Dogma. The like high quake ability would like create these massive spires of earth that like shoot out of the ground. And like the idea of those being like physical pieces of geometry in the environment that you can then like use to jump.
It was all
off
temporary. The idea there'd be permanence to it is from like both a combat and a puzzle perspective. Like, is there a world? Like, I can't remember. Like when you use the quake spell and the things come out of the ground, could you climb those objects? Or they
you
were just attacked. So that, I don't know if they're going to go this far, but that's where my brain started going when I saw, well, if I can make a bridge, are there other things that I can make? And like, because climbing, exploring like space is a huge part of what is a differentiator of Dragon's Dogma in this style of game. And I was like, now that we got to go full Tears of the Kingdom. But if like, if what we're gesturing at is a sense of like you manipulating the physical space of the world around you and then interacting with that more than just it's a cool attack is possibly very exciting.
I mean, they also showed a troll breaking a bridge. A cyclops breaking a bridge by like stomping on it. And like the way that the bridge reacted did not seem like a canned, did not seem super canned in that way. Like that didn't feel like a set piece moment. That feels like a thing that can happen in the world to the environment, which makes me wonder if like using spells to, and like using abilities to reshape the environment will in fact be like a central gameplay pillar. And that would be really exciting. But also like, you know, even setting aside like gameplay stuff, man, this trailer nails the tone of Dragon's Dogma. It makes me so happy to see all those little freaks look like Dragon's Dogma characters and also like make really land the extremely grandiose energy of that first game. That trailer opens with a quote from Honoré de Balzac, who's this like French novelist. And that quote is effectively translates to, conviction is the human will at its highest form, or like at its highest power. And the version of the word power that they use, puissance, is like used to talk about generally the power of the state. And like archaically is used to talk about like the power of the state and the power of the sovereign. And so like conviction is the highest, is human will like manifest as the will of the sovereign or the power of the sovereign is like a really cool tonal like thing to build the game around. And the rest of the trailer seemed really interested in playing with like the iconography of the first Dragon's Dogma and like invoking the capital T, capital S, the state. And like how power functions in that first game in a way that I'm like very excited about, because I think that like the original Dragon's Dogma story is not great, but it is interesting.
yeah.
It's not great, but it is interesting.
It's got a sick ending though.
It's got a sick ending. And like the version of that game that actually got to be finished instead of being like cut down to 40% of its original scope. I wonder if that would have been like a really interesting and like unique narrative experience, as opposed to like what we got, which was an interesting and unique narrative experience, yeah, but not in the most positive ways. And like,
gotta squint at it. It's like, well, I see what you're going for and some interesting ideas. Rob, I think I can get us to transition out of here, like using Dragon's Dogma, which is to say, if you go read Austin's kind of like newsletter thing he does, what was it, Clockwork?
Clockwork Worlds.
Clockwork Worlds. He wrote about Dragon's Dogma sometime back. I highly recommend go back and checking it out. And Austin pointed out something that I sort of knew, but had kind of forgotten, which is like one of Austin and I have like little connections over time, like him emailing me when I worked at G4 to see if there was any freelance budget available, which was I didn't. And then Austin getting interested in Dragon's Dogma because I got interested in Dragon's Dogma and then did a quick look at Giant Bomb, where I was trying to convince other people, I know this game is super weird, but like it's kind of interesting. And that being some like foundational connection between the two of us in terms of what gets us, like, I don't know that we get to Waypoint unless that quick look of Dragon's Dogma happens. And much like the Dragon Hearts in Dragon's Dogma, our hearts were bound. And so the fact that, yes, Waypoint is ending, but you know what also is happening? Dragon's Dogma 2. And Rob, that just gives me, I don't know. The future could be anything, couldn't it?
They made a sequel to Dragon's Dogma.
And if they made a sequel to Dragon's Dogma, of all things, then anything could happen.
Anything has happened. Like, if you didn't
Marathon
could come back. And if you, like, didn't cancel a sub, I mean, what could the future bring? Right?
Exactly. Like,
subs are powerful.
People in there, they're canceling their subs. The Waypoint Plus memberful, and I understand why. But you know,
We told them to for a while,
And now we're not telling them to do that. Yeah,
now we're saying,
hold on,
just hold on a second.
Let it marinate a little.
Take your finger off the button, please.
Yeah,
we promise you. You want to consider that.
Vice isn't going to just start charging your card and being like, out of bankruptcy. You don't have to worry about that. That's not going to happen. But anyway, that's a wrap on today's episode of Waypoint Radio. The clock is now 1 minute to midnight, but it is always darkest before the dawn. If you want more from Waypoint, well, you got one more week. Tomorrow, as you were listening to this, Kato and I might be doing the final Motorsport Manager stream. And that means everything is on the table. Overhaul, there's things that I was like, Kato, we couldn't possibly do this.
Why not?
Maybe we could.
Yeah.
Maybe if not now, then when? Exactly. Patrick and I discussed sports and the damp squib of a new season of Ted Lasso on the sports podcast. There's going to be no new show Tuesday because Memorial Day is happening and we are not going to be recording on Monday. But That means the final Waypoint Radio will be releasing next week. We are also going to be doing some kind of like proper send-off stream for Waypoint. We are going to be handling all of that stuff on Thursday the 1st because, you know, once they actually do say you're laid off, you have to leave now, you tend to lose access to key infrastructure pretty fast.
Yeah. Well, and it's like the, we're going to have to sign, like, you tend to sign, like, agree, like severance agreements, employee stuff, like on your final day. So it's just they'll be, and we don't know when those, you know, like when are those times gonna be.
I might have to go into the office to hand over my laptop.
I mean, stuff like that.
They want my laptop back.
Demand a FedEx box.
Yeah, yeah. I could probably just, but I'm also in the city. I'm here. It feels, I don't know.
It's true.
Yeah.
The keyboard is fucked up beyond words, friends. Like, do you really want this back?
Frankly, they can have the shitty laptop back. It's not a good, like, the one I have is trash.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, there'll just be things going on that final day that, to make it that we don't want to have get tied up in a goodbye. Like, it's a clean break on Thursday. You know, I think we'll have some stuff during the day and then have some fun in the evening. And I don't think people will be disappointed if you show up.
Yeah. I did see people I got June 2nd circled for like the end of Waypoint stuff. Maybe just move that over June a tick. First. Just to circle June 1st. that's the day, because that is the day where, like, that's kind of the last normal day, and June 2nd is gonna be a lot of change happening that day. So keep an eye on June 1st. Our theme music is by Bowen. The track is Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Learn more at waypoint.zone/BOEN. You can find us on Twitter and various other places, but I'm not going through that right now because I'm in a hurry. For now, we are calling time on this week. We'll talk to you again next week. Until then, fuck capitalism. Go home.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Yeah.
Oh, Rob, we didn't get this. Source: the NBA's competition committee is discussing the potential of an in-game penalty for flops that would result in a technical foul free throw.
Wow.
But you're gonna have to figure out what's an actual flop. Like, yeah, guys are getting thwapped in the nuts so much that it's hard to tell. Like,
there are some.
Do your
that
nuts
are
really hurt, or are you just being a punk? Nuts?
Wait, they're flopping.
Rob,
they're flopping
there are
in
some
basketball? What the fuck?
Oh, yeah.
That's soccer, bro. Flopping. That's our shit. No. Get out of here.
No. Let me. I don't. Listen. I am pro dumb bullshit in sports. That's the game. Mm-hmm. It's part of the. It truly is. There's a reason that hockey enforcers fucking rule. There's a reason that soccer player who bites people fucking rule.
Wait, Suarez?
Yeah. I'm pro Suarez. Listen, I think one of the things I said during the World Cup was that one of the things I said during the World Cup is that I think that Suarez should get as many bites as Cristiano Ronaldo's are in that game.
Okay. Watch this clip. Rob, this is what we're talking about here. And I like LeBron, but fucking watch this clip. Like, come on!
What? Listen.
Hold on. He's the, not into the slow, bro.
Yeah.
Slow-mo.
Yeah.
Slow-mo's worse. He throws
the slow, bro. The slow-mo's amazing.
Listen. He's not a good actor, but he is an effective one.
They are, yes.
That's like, very funny.
I appreciate flops in the same way that, like, you can appreciate theatrical performances, where it's like, this is not meant for cameras. This is meant for, like, 18 dudes running the fuck around and one ref to be like, there's, like, well, so many guys here. And I'm, like,
the weird thing
is,
if you don't flop, because the refs don't see shit, right? The refs are actually really bad at picking up, like, infractions unless there is a big tell, like someone hitting the floor. And so to an extent, if you don't make a point of hitting the floor, if you've received like a foul, you'll never get that call. And that's your job. you need those calls.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I've been kneed in the head before and didn't have a foul called. Like if you get up, that's a you problem.
That you time they caved in your chest cavity. Arguably, you should have made a bigger deal out of that.
Yeah.